Gary, as far as SEC football media days, from your perspective, what does it mean for you?
You know, during the off season, I get away from football. I still watch sports, but I try to take a good couple months off. I get involved in some of the developing that I do in real estate and do what I do privately. And I really, as much as I'm a celebrity and I have to talk and give opinions during football season, I just kind of shrink. I'm very, very private, stay at home a lot, go out to dinner with just my wife, don't socialize a whole lot. So this is kind of the kickoff of, you know, Gary Danielson, the ultra ego, has to come out. He's got to give opinions, you know, about things. And I don't do a lot of that in the off season. So now I'm energized. I'm ready to say some stuff. I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to go out in public and, you know, comb my hair. And, you know, a lot of times I just like be sloppy for a week, you know. And so I guess the biggest word is this kind of like I have a bunch of ideas that I keep in my iPad about football and talking points and things that I want to talk about during the season. But then I come here and you guys all give me new, you know, angles and ideas.
Right.
But I think most of it is, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and I just get excited again. It's like, oh, boy, this is coming up again. And I love, and it's not a drug, but it is a high. I mean, these games are, you know, our fan base expects a lot from every aspect of our conference. The officials, the quarterbacks, the head coaches, the play calling, and their broadcasters. We expect a lot out of you. And, you know, I get they don't agree with everything I say,
right,
but they expect me to be prepared and have an opinion. And I kind of thrive in that, in that atmosphere. It keeps me sharp and it keeps me ready to go back to it again.
Does it take you back to when you were in a huddle,
yeah,
when you were in a locker
mm-hmm.
room as a football player mm-hmm. from college days to the NFL?
It does. I have a few things that I tell there's a lot of quarterbacks that I've talked to in college that have quizzed me about being an NFL quarterback from a couple different aspects, okay? Like Drew Brees picked my brain a lot and Tom Brady when I did his games, and there's been a bunch of others. And I told them how important it is to be able to handle two aspects of being a quarterback. There's the aspect of can you – and I was actually taught this by a – I'll actually tell you who told – I haven't told this story before. It was my very first year in professional football. I was in the World Football League. And George Sauer Jr. was on my team in the World Football League from the Jets, and he played under Joe Namath. And I was picking his brain, and he was saying, Gary, you got a shot here. You can make the NFL. And I said, well, what did Joe have, you know, besides being great? And he said, he had the two things you got to have to be a quarterback. And he said, it's hard to do. You have to be comfortable being the guy where everything you do when we win is right, and everything you do when we lose is we lost because of you. And if you can't handle being the guy, you can't play quarterback in the NFL or the SEC, okay? The other is, can you be a guy? Can you be one of the teammates? Can you be the guy that can get along with everybody, have empathy, understand what the non-stars are going through? It was a little different from Joe than me, but you understand,
right,
being the quarterback, you have to be the guy and be a guy at the same time. And I thought that was great advice, and I kind of bring that to my broadcasting team. I'm the quarterback of our CBS team. When Vern was here, when Tracy was here, Allie, and now Brad, you know, I'm the football guy. I kind of call the plays. You know, Brad, you know, he's in his lane, and Craig makes happen what I visualize, but I have to be the guy. But because I'm the one used to looking at game plans and seeing things unfold on the field. But you have to be you got to understand that the sound people have a tough job and these people have a tough job, and you have to be able to relate to them all, or the team doesn't work. And even bigger picture than that, you have to understand your position in this SEC. It's important to a lot of people, and you have to be able to handle being the guy of being criticized, or you can't handle this job.
Yeah, I remember last year we were talking about Kyle Schirmer with Vanderbilt, you know, his dad, head coach now with the Giants, and you had some really great words to say about Kyle Schirmer as a quarterback. And to me, a former quarterback saying that about another quarterback, that has to mean more.
Well, it actually is as tough as it turned out for Kyle last year, and the visions were different. I was even more impressed with him. It's hard to lose. It's hard to get beaten up like that. It's hard to lose 59-0 and have a, you know, everybody coming at you from all sides like that. And then to survive it. I'll tell you, another guy who did it and handled it well, he had a better team to play on, was Jarrett Stidham. He started out with an 11-sack game, you know. And people were coming down on him, and he handled it. He righted the ship. He kept his confidence. He kept the confidence of his teammates. And then he regained the confidence of his coaches and play callers. And, I mean, Kyle's got, you know, if Kyle, I don't mean any disrespect to Vanderbilt, but if Kyle was the quarterback at Alabama or LSU, he could be a championship quarterback. He's just on a team that, you know, Vanderbilt has to play perfect every week or they're not going to win. And, you know, Alabama doesn't even play perfect every week.
Visiting with Gary Danielson, you know, this year we've got some established quarterbacks returning, but we also have some quarterback battles. How do they handle that competition as far as the quarterback, especially the one who wins the job and the one that doesn't? And he's probably thinking maybe the relatives are saying, hey, you should have been the guy. How do they handle that?
Yeah, you're right. And it's not – it's everybody. And when you get recruited by the SEC or the Big Ten or these icon schools and you're a 4 or 5-star guy, you've been recruited since you've been 14 years old. And, you know, you're – you know, I was recruited like that. And you know, I actually, when I talk to college teams, and I've done this a few times, you know, the first, at the end of my speech, I have a finish, and I have all the first-year players. I said, first-year players, stand up. And I say, you know what? Shut up. We were all good in high school. But don't back down, because you're here for a reason, okay? And that's the quarterback position. And that's what you face with these transferring guys. Now, I've been a longtime advocate of a different type of redshirting rule. And I think the new rule of being able to play 4 games and still redshirt is really going to play out well for Georgia and Alabama, especially Alabama, but even Georgia. You can keep a backup quarterback and still have them play at the end of the year or if you need them in 4 games and still keep a redshirt for – example, Jalen Hurts, he can play this fall. Let's suppose Tua wins the job, which I suspect he will. Jalen will be the backup quarterback. Nick will save him for a time when he needs 4 games out of him. He'll be able to learn more of a pro style all year, get better, graduate in December, and be able to graduate transfer and play the year after. Now, Nick's not going to talk about that publicly, but that's a huge advantage for – if they didn't have this redshirt rule, Jalen Hurts, I think, would already be gone right now. And the same thing with Justin Fields going in for Georgia. I mean, Jake Fromm, let's suppose Fromm just runs it out nicely. They'll get a redshirt year out of Fields, and then they'll go on from there.
Tennessee this year, Jeremy Pruitt, first-year head coach with the Vols. And, you know, it's a program from a tradition standpoint. You remember when Tennessee was relevant on the national scale. Student-athletes in high school right now, they don't. How does Tennessee become relevant again?
Hard work, toughness, discipline, dedication to assignments, getting back in the weight room. With all due respect to Butch, and Butch earned the job at Tennessee. I just thought they got soft. I thought they got undisciplined. I thought they focused on the wrong things. They were more concerned about the no huddle and hurry up than they were about blocking. I thought too many players on that team were looking to the sideline for a trick play or a magical blitz or some kind of, you know, coach, give us a zone defense that we can trick people. It doesn't work that way. Jeremy's the perfect guy for this. He really is. I know there's been some talk about, you know, what may be Jeremy's weaknesses. I don't see it. Tennessee has to get tougher, and Jeremy will demand toughness from Tennessee.
By the way, you mentioned whether it was Tom Brady or Drew Brees and, you know, seeking out your advice. Go back to Drew Brees. I mean, it's under the radar, but either the fourth or fifth week of the year, we're talking about the career all-time passing leader yardage-wise in NFL history.
I know.
And it's kind of like nobody's really, really looking at that just yet.
Well, and here's what's even just as amazing. You know, Drew played it from a basketball on grass offense. If you watched him closely, though, you could see some of those unteachable skills that, to be honest, only a few quarterbacks have. Like Tua has. Tua sees openings and almost cloud openings. He can almost feel things opening before they do and place balls where, like, how'd you see that? You know, and he knows when to touch it in there, when to fire it to the side, and it's an impeccable type throwing ability, and he's really has a bright future, I think. But it's unteachable. But Drew goes from being, and it's funny because I begged the Detroit Lions to take him with the 16th or 17th pick, and they go, hey, a little slow. He doesn't have a great arm, you know. And I go, God, he can just feel the game. But not only did he do that, then he went out to San Diego and played, and the coaches and the scouts and everybody
right.
watched him for four more years and weren't really sold at him. They bring in Philip Rivers. So then he really only has one place to go with New Orleans and Sean Payton, and he becomes one of the greatest that the NFL has ever produced. And, well, he's a joy to watch. He's one of those guys that has, you know, like a little bit of like John McEnroe, he can – touch the ball or hit the ball or move the ball and move in the pocket. It's like watching a dancer to me.
Having a chance to visit with Gary Danielson with CBS, you know, it's interesting over the last couple of years, the other power conferences, not the SEC, but the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, et cetera, you know, closed the gap a little bit,
right.
You know, caught up with the SEC. And we look at this year, I'm looking at the fact that Texas A&M, $75 million investment with Jimbo Fisher. Here's Dan Mullen returning to the University of Florida. I mentioned Tennessee earlier. That window, I don't know if it's a matter of pride or whatever, but I think top to bottom, especially over the next couple of years, we're talking about a stronger SEC.
Yeah, and I think this might be the weakest year because the next year those programs will improve. They have to. Too good of a coaches. I think it was only natural. When somebody runs, breaks the four-minute mile, then everybody knows, well, if I ain't going to win unless I run under 4 minutes, so
right.
I better start training. And that's what the SEC did. They raised the bar, and the other conference looked around and go, we either get better or we die. And they have. You know, Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan State and Wisconsin, and next will be Nebraska, are getting better. Okay, but yes, the weakness of the college system is, though, that the conference can get better and it can lower your chances for getting teams in the championship. That's why I've always been an advocate that the Final Four champions should be picked from the five power conferences, the four best teams. I don't care if it's just a subjective choice, okay? Now, if somebody is 7-6 in an upset championship, okay, you're not even a top 10 team. You're not going to get invited. But if you win the SEC championship with two losses, how can you not have the SEC champion represented in the playoffs? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I kind of feel the same way about the Big Ten. I mean, going into this year, it would be a shock if they bypassed the Big Ten again. So now the other one that is standing right out there is Clemson is going to be a prohibitive favorite in
right.
every game. They almost got a spot, if you ask me. And so now there's two. Now you start to look at your Big Ten. Okay, so the Big Ten, and so let's suppose Ohio State or Michigan, pick a team is in, and Clemson in. Are they really going to take two teams from the SEC? So let's suppose Alabama and Georgia go undefeated.
Right.
You're really going to take the loser and not have anybody from the Big 12 again? You know? So I think they're going to – unless there's a two-game spread, I don't see two teams from this league going this year. And it is conceivable because of the upsets. that you could have a one-loss team playing a one-loss team in the championship, and everybody worried about getting a team in.
I talked to Bill Hancock yesterday, the executive director of the College Football Playoff, and I said, I don't know necessarily the total ramifications, what you can and cannot do during the course of the season. I do know that you can't lose on the road to an unranked team by 31 points.
Right. Well, that was obvious last year, I thought. I caught a lot of hell by saying that it doesn't really matter whether Auburn or Georgia wins the SEC championship. Alabama's in. I mean, they're not going to keep Alabama out. They had too good of a year, and they deserved to be in. They earned it from game one through game 12, a chance to play for the national championship. It didn't matter who won the game between Auburn or Georgia was going to be in and Alabama was going to be in last year. But I don't know if I like that. I would prefer, because of the top level, unless there is a distinct variation, I think the championship should mean more. If it's, like for example, if it's one loss Alabama who lost to undefeated Georgia up against one loss Washington, okay, and they're the champions of the Pac-12, I would almost always go with the one loss champion of the big other conference.
It's always fun talking football. Thank you again for taking time out with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.